Welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm your host this week, Tom Wheeler, Executive Director of the Environmental Protection Information Center. And joining me by Zoom in the middle of this weird new phase of the pandemic are Colin Fisk, Executive Director of the Coalition for Responsible Transportation Priorities. Hey, Colin.
Hey, Tom.
We also have Jen Kalt, Director of Humboldt Baykeeper. Hey, Jen.
Hey, everybody.
And Larry Glass, Executive Director of the North Coast Environmental Center. Hey, Larry.
Hello.
Okay, well, so today we're talking about the proposed Coster couplet, which you may have read about in the Lost Coast Outpost, and we'll put the links to those articles in the show notes. And so we're going to talk about, first, the history of how we got to this proposed road redevelopment.
When the original freeway routes were abandoned, and the Bayshore Mall planning was devised for Broadway. Broadway was relatively undeveloped in the early 80s. There was not much on Broadway, and so you were pretty much unrestricted flow up Broadway. And then the big decision was made to begin to develop Broadway with the Bayshore Mall development in the mid-80s. And that really changed the character and the traffic flow on Broadway dramatically. And then, as you see, development has filled in up and down the Broadway corridor. And there were many voices back in those days warning that we would get to where we are now if willy-nilly development of Broadway was allowed to happen like that. But of course, the moneyed interest didn't want to hear that because they had lots of land that was undeveloped along Broadway that they wanted to develop and make money with. That's kind of how we got into the mess. And the way that they sold that idea of development on Broadway came forward, I remember it being in the late 90s, was this alternate route along the waterfront. And that was how they were going to relieve all the congestion they knew they were going to create by developing the whole Broadway strip.
So, Larry, how does this fit into the bypass? Because that was pretty significantly before all of this, right?
Actually, the concept of the Bayshore Mall and the freeway were somewhat contemporaneous. There was going to be one of, you know, they had five or six routes that they were considering. And one of the routes, the more popular one with the city fathers of Eureka, was the one that had the freeway making a big major off-ramp right there where the Bayshore Mall is. So they were going to dump traffic off of 101, basically right to the Bayshore Mall, was one of the concepts. So it was contemporaneous.
Can I add something which you, I don't know if this would go with Larry's comment or not, but you know, one thing that I think is sort of important to emphasize is that the pattern of Broadway, you know, the way that Broadway was designed and developed as Larry is describing, puts it into this category of sort of urban suburban arterials, which were developed mostly in the 60s, 70s through the early 2000s. And which are today by far the most dangerous roads for pedestrians. In most cities, the bulk of pedestrian fatalities are on this exact type of road. And so it's not something that's necessarily unique to Eureka. This is a pattern of development that we've seen everywhere and that is deadly to pedestrians everywhere.
Jen, can you talk about another effort that Caltrans and the city tried in the early 2000s to address Broadway?
Sure. Well, back then, about 20 years ago, they started planning to build a road right through the middle of what is called Palco Marsh, basically where the Hikshari Trail and the Eureka Waterfront Trail are today. And, you know, it was doomed from the start because it's in the coastal zone and building a road on coastal wetlands is really problematic for lots of different reasons. But also those wetlands are some of the last major wetlands in a fairly large area. And they've all either been protected by conservation easements or they were purchased with public money for conservation, or they're mitigation for something like the wetland fill at the Bayshore Mall. And so you don't just, you know, protect wetlands and then 10, 15, 20 years later say, ah, forget it. Let's just put a road through the middle of this. So it was very controversial. It was highly unlikely to succeed. And yet the city of Eureka spent many, many years pursuing it. And they spent over $1.2 million planning a road that was really not ever going to be built.
Colin, let's focus on the safety threat to pedestrians and all of those other road users, non-vehicular road users. How does this road compare? Is it safe as designed?
No, it is not safe. And I think that's, first of all, a kind of common sense thing. If anyone who looks at it could tell you that it's not safe, especially for people who aren't in a car, it's just not designed for them. And the numbers bear that out and the stories bear that out, that people who are walking and biking are very regularly, you know, distressingly regularly hit and seriously injured or killed. Just in the last year or so, four people who were either walking or riding a bike have been hit and killed on Broadway. So it is definitely not safe for those folks. It's not really safe for anybody, but it's especially not safe for people who are not in a vehicle.
All right. Well, so Colin, let's get into why the road, as it's currently designed, is deadly for pedestrians, because I think that there are some things that most listeners probably wouldn't understand. It doesn't seem intuitive that road design can influence pedestrian behavior and driver behavior. So let's talk about how the built environment structurally puts people at risk and forces more problematic behavior.
Yeah, so there's a couple of things. Maybe most importantly is the issue of speed. You know, there's a large scientific literature about you know, roadway design factors that influence speed, and you know, things like wide lanes and straight roads, few obstructions. These things just tend to cause people to drive faster, and people like to think that they're in full control. But you know, the science is pretty clear that when you have wide lanes, when you have wide roads, when you have, you know, relatively few stops, and, you know, sort of a number of other factors go into it, but wide turning radii, et cetera, people will drive faster. And speed is the number one variable sort of relating to the severity of crashes. And in fact, speed is related sort of exponentially to the severity of a crash for a pedestrian. So, you know, doubling the speed of a moving vehicle could quadruple the chance that a pedestrian would die in a crash. You know, design factors that encourage speed are a really big factor. The other thing that you talked about is pedestrian design, and that is also really important, which is that, you know, just like drivers, pedestrians want to get where they're going, you know, as expeditiously as possible. And if you don't provide, you know, enough opportunities for them to sort of safely cross the street, or if you make it inconvenient or difficult or even unsafe to do it where they're supposed to do it, then they will use other methods. And that's just, it's just basically human nature. And another thing, you know, there are other sort of built-in factors to consider. For example, if people are relying on a bus, you know, and the Redwood Transit Service, for example, runs up and down Broadway, if they're relying on a bus to get them to class at CR or to work somewhere, they might not be able to afford missing that bus that only comes every half hour or at sometimes a day every hour. And, you know, that might cause someone to, you know, sort of run across the street in order to catch a bus. And, you know, so there are things like that we can really predict, but that have not so far really been factored into the way that these roads are planned.
So we've had two previous attempts to do something about Broadway. And now we are looking at a potentially third attempt to do something about Broadway. Colin, what is going on?
Well, so first of all, I want to clarify one thing, which is past attempts to change Broadway were really focused, I think, almost entirely on sort of congestion relief and moving vehicles through Eureka as quickly as possible. And, you know, one positive change in this latest planning effort has been that, you know, in addition to congestion relief, a primary focus has been safety. So that is a welcome change. And that comes in part from sort of the changing priorities in politics on the ground, and in part from, you know, slowly changing mandates from the state. So, you know, congestion relief has not disappeared by any means from the goals, but safety is also, you know, sort of front and center for once, which is really important. And so what has happened is Caltrans has partnered with the city of Eureka and HCOG, the Humboldt County Association of Governments, to conduct a planning effort for the Broadway corridor. And, you know, that started about a year ago, and it is just about wrapping up now. The purpose of it, well, it had a very broad purpose, frankly. If you were to read the purpose, it kind of is to fix everything you could think of about Broadway, from, you know, congestion to safety to sea level rise planning to, you know, pretty much anything you could think of about that roadway or that corridor that might be a problem. They kind of threw it in there. And, you know, the reason for that, frankly, is that the end result is intended to be a grant application for a program called the Solutions for Congested Corridors program, which is a state competitive grant that also has a very broad range of, you know, sort of goals to it, including congestion relief and safety. And so, you know, this process has gone on, and there have been several public meetings, a number of stakeholder meetings. It started off with a very broad range of possible alternatives, which sort of got narrowed down with public and stakeholder input. We are at a point now where this group of HCOG and Caltrans and the city of Eureka, along with their consultants, are recommending a solution, which is, you know, making some multimodal, some bicycle, pedestrian, and transit improvements to the southern part of the Broadway corridor. And then for the middle two segments, or sort of basically from the mall, Bayshore Mall north, adding couplets. So turning Broadway into one way and then adding another road, turning Coster in the north part, and then pretty much a new road in the more middle segment into a complementary one-way road to try and continue the pattern of 4th and 5th Street. And the idea is that, you know, this would provide them with additional right-of-way to work with. So they could add, you know, nice bike lanes and wide sidewalks and maybe even transit lanes and so forth without removing any through traffic vehicular lanes, and in fact sort of increasing vehicular capacity a bit to speed traffic through at the same time. So it's kind of a we can get everything we want type of a solution.
So we were talking earlier about the new proposed Coster couplet design. And so there are some theoretical benefits of this, one of which is that you're making a narrower road for pedestrians to have to cross. You know, right now you're crossing two parking lanes and five lanes of travel. So if you were to redesign a road, you could build in good pedestrian design at the outset, right? So there's some intuitive benefit to this. Let's get back to the problems that a couplet could face. So Jen, I know that one of the things that doomed the Waterfront Drive extension, one of the proposed fixes to Broadway, was an issue of wetland fill. And there is going to be wetland fill here in the Coster couplet redesign. Why does the city think that it can do it? And why are they probably wrong in that assumption?
Well, I'm not even sure they've really fully analyzed the extent of wetlands in the project area, especially on the balloon track, because it would appear from the maps that their plan is to put the road right through the wetlands on the balloon track, when a big portion of the balloon track, in fact, the majority of it, just have little scattered pockets of wetland. But Clark Slough, which is the last really tidal slough in the Eureka area, in between Elk River and Eureka Slough, goes right through the balloon track. And that's a really important waterway for Dungeness crabs nursery area, for example. The baby crabs they hatch in these tidal slough channels, and it's really critical for them. And then, you know, it supports all kinds of other aquatic life that's a lot of which is protected. So why you would plan your road to go right through the middle of that, it's kind of like, you know, it's really putting the cart before the horse to even draw the lines on the map. And yet that's what they've done. What's really problematic is that all of this development, everything west of Broadway was at one time a tidal mudflat. And it was filled at, you know, different times in the first half of the 20th century. The balloon track was filled in the 1940s. And so it's all just fill sitting on top of some, you know, tidally influenced mudflats that are still underneath there, you know. And so as sea level rises, it's going to become wetter and wetter. And so, you know, basically starting off planning to fill wetlands in the coastal zone, which is not allowed for a road. There's very few uses for coastal wetlands that involve filling and basically destroying the wetland. And those are things like a fishing pier or a fishing dock, you know, things that you can't do inland, but building a road is not one of them. So it's really hard to understand how the city thinks they're going to get around all these state and federal protections. And then on top of all of the prohibitions for wetland fill, even if you could get approval for that, you would have to do so much mitigation. It's usually about a 4-to-1 ratio where you have to go out and replace the wetlands that you're destroying. So that would cost unknown millions and millions of dollars. The project itself is already estimated at being $150 to $175 million, not including wetland mitigation, not including the cleanup of the balloon track, which Caltrans estimates at about $50 million. So really not clear how the city thinks they're going to navigate all of these constraints without analyzing them first on the front end.
So Larry, you were a Eureka City Council member back when the city was last considering the Waterfront Drive extension. What are some lessons that you learned as a city council member from that time that you would like to impart on the current city council?
Well, and before that, I was part of a group called CREG, Citizen for Real Economic Growth, and we were concerned about the whole waterfront development scheme. What I learned during my time on the city council was there's this, from the beginnings of the Coastal Act, the city of Eureka has just chosen to deny, like just be in complete denial that the Coastal Act even really exists. And only when they're drug kicking and screaming into compliance do they ever comply. And even then they gripe about it. And so whenever they do planning, they just don't consider coastal issues and the Coastal Act. And then they always wind up in trouble because, well, they didn't consider that. They've tried mounting campaigns against the Coastal Commission over the years and tried to circumvent it and go to court over it and get right-wing organizations to back their legal plays. And it's all failed. Of Peter Douglas, who used to be the head of the Coastal Commission, used to take particular issue with the city of Eureka. And there was like a feud almost between Peter Douglas and the city of Eureka, because the city would just thumb its nose at the coastal. So my advice to the current sitting city council is read the Coastal Act, pay attention to, you know, what the rules are and what the city's supposed to be doing before you embark on these crazy plans that they seem to every decade come up with another plan to do something in violation of the Coastal Act.
It also seems curious to me that at all of these planning meetings that we've been to, I don't think I've seen anybody there from the Coastal Commission. If you can identify that the Coastal Commission is likely going to be a barrier to your plans, you would I would imagine, want to get input from the Coastal Commission at the very outset of the project, but it doesn't appear that that has been a priority for the city in developing this project, or at least not yet.
So I just want to make it really clear that it's not impossible to build a road through the balloon track. I mean, it has a lot of hurdles to be sure, but it's not impossible. And it's also, you know, not something particularly objectionable if it's done properly. You know, the cleanup has to be done properly to protect Humboldt Bay. And Caltrans has made it crystal clear that they are not going to pay for the cleanup. So this, they've stated at these meetings, the city of Eureka would have to pay for the cleanup. We don't really know how much it'll cost. The $50 million estimate is just an estimate because the extent of contamination hasn't been fully identified yet. The city is currently using a federal Superfund cleanup grant to test the, well, they're going to start testing, but it's $250,000 that they have to do some sampling to identify how much contamination is on the site. And then they would have to get all the money to do the cleanups and then transfer the land to Caltrans in such a way that Caltrans would never be held responsible for any of the contamination on site. But there are lots of areas on the balloon track that are not wetland and that could be developed if it was done in the right way.
So we face substantial barriers to build a road here. So just to reiterate all that we've talked about so far, it is sea level rise. We're going to have this area become inundated with sea level rise. The bay is going to swallow parts of it, and in short time, right? This isn't some far, far off projection. This is something that will occur in our lifetimes. We also have issues with wetland fill and the prohibition by the Coastal Act of filling a wetland for a road. And we have issues of contamination and cost to clean up contamination. So Jen, as you say, it's not impossible, but there are just a lot of structural barriers that would, in our view, probably counsel against the city moving forward with this project, or moving forward exclusively with this project. And so, Colin, I want to bring you back into the conversation here. There is an opportunity cost. So if the city is pursuing this project, it is conceivably not pursuing immediate safety improvements on the 101. Is that true? Is the city moving forward? Is Caltrans moving forward on immediate safety improvements?
Well, so, you know, we at CRTP, along with our allies, you know, on this show, Baykeeper and Epic and NEC, we've been, you know, sort of making noise the whole time about just the urgent need for safety improvements as people continue to die on Broadway, and that making this sort of broader point that if we put all of our energy and efforts into these long-term plans, they may never occur because of the structural barriers we've been talking about, or if they do occur, they'll certainly take many years to be constructed. And during that time, people will continue to die, will continue to lose lives on Broadway. And so, you know, to their credit, Caltrans and HCOG and the city of Eureka have picked up on that. You know, at the last city council meeting where this was discussed, the city put forward some ideas for additional safe pedestrian crossings that could be done in the near term. The city council, really most of the discussion was focused on the need for near-term improvements, and Caltrans is supposed to be coming back to the city in the next several weeks with, you know, additional information, because it is a Caltrans road, on, you know, what kind of near-term improvements can be made. And I would say from our perspective, the most critical thing is just to get as many safety improvements as possible constructed as quickly as possible, so that we save lives. And if the, you know, over the long term, if it turns out that the city and Caltrans can, you know, overcome these barriers of contamination and wetland fill, et cetera, sea level rise, and can build couplets like they're envisioning, then, you know, we'll continue to engage in that process. And it's possible that those could be really well designed and could be beneficial. Over the short term, the important thing is to do, you know, do what we can right now on Broadway. And we're, it looks like there's some movement in that direction.
In these pedestrian fatalities that we've had, as you said, we've had four since we began this planning process to reimagine what Broadway could be like. I think that the media descriptions of these fatalities and other injuries on Broadway are somewhat problematic, and you've really helped me understand why these are problematic. Can you talk about, just very briefly, how the media talks about vehicular strikes and how that influences our public debate on safety improvement projects?
Yeah, and there's been actually, again, quite a bit of sort of academic research on this, which is really interesting. So this is not just anecdotal, but, you know, U.S. media in reporting on pedestrian strikes, you know, vehicles striking pedestrians and bicyclists, the coverage tends to blame the victims. You know, it tends to focus on, you know, factors that suggest that the victim made some irresponsible choice that led to them being struck, and tends to completely ignore the patterns and the context, you know, that show that that this is not, you know, just somebody making a poor decision. You might be able to say that this is just someone making a poor decision if it happens, you know, once. But when it happens over and over and over again in the same places and following the same patterns, you have to recognize that, you know, there's a structural problem going on. And when you look at the statistics nationally, there are other things that really jump out, such as, you know, the concentration on these sort of urban, suburban arterials that we mentioned earlier, the fact that certain people are more likely to be hit and killed. And those are people who are older, people who are low income, people of color, people with disabilities. And, you know, those kinds of statistical trends are very clear, and you can't sort of ascribe that to just individuals making poor decisions. These are structural problems with the roads, the design of the roads, and where they're located. You know, they get to how we have to fix the problem as a society rather than just sort of saying that some individual acted irresponsibly and it's their fault and we can just move on.
Is there anything else that we want to bring up on today's episode?
Go ahead, Larry.
I don't even know if this will fit in, but I feel compelled to say it. And that is that Broadway was never actually designed. We need to divorce ourselves from that notion. Broadway was a highway. It basically, the highway, when I first moved to Eureka in 1971, really 101 went all the way to Wabash. And that's when you really started feeling like you were on Broadway, was after Wabash. Before then, it was just the state highway. And there were no curbs, there were no sidewalks, there weren't even pedestrians on that part of the road. And as development happened willy-nilly along Broadway there, eventually in the 90s, they start putting curbing in and some sidewalks. But all of this was never designed. And it was always, like Colin is always saying, it was always about vehicles. It was never about people on bicycles or transit or pedestrians. It's only been just recently that anybody's even given any thought to that. And it's really time to give a lot of thought to that because of what's evolved over this time. Now it is an area that pedestrians need to use and bicyclists need to use and mass transit needs to navigate. So anyway.
Well, and also now we have all this magnificent waterfront trail on the west side of Broadway. And so there are a lot of people who live on one side, the inland side of Broadway, who need to cross Broadway to get to all these beautiful trails along the Eureka waterfront. And having safe places for people to take their kids so that, you know, you don't want to see what we used to see in McKinleyville way too often. I don't know if people are still doing this, but putting their kids' bicycles in their cars and driving to the Hammond Trail because they don't have a safe way to ride bikes on the roads to get to the trail. You know, it's just crazy. Like we need to facilitate all these people using all these wonderful trails that we've seen built in the last few years.
That's a great point. Try getting to the north or the south end of Hexari Trail on foot. pretty difficult.
Yeah, I think you have to do that by starting on the north end of the Hexari Trail.
Tom, I'd like to make like a couple of other quick points. And one thing that I want to point out is that there is actually a lot that can be done within the existing Broadway right-of-way, you know, in the near term that will make dramatic safety improvements. So the city, you know, to its credit, is proposing some of those things, which are, you know, additional safe mid-block pedestrian crossings, you know, with pedestrian refuges, sort of islands in the middle, and flashing lights that can, you know, stop vehicles and marked crosswalks and so on and so forth. Those are really important, and especially if they're well placed. There are also a lot of improvements we can make to existing signalized intersections, you know, that provide bicyclists and pedestrians with safer opportunities to use those intersections. There's room, even without eliminating travel lanes along most of the corridor, along the entire corridor, you know, there's room to provide bike lanes, and along most of the corridor, buffered bike lanes. So there really is a lot that can be done and could be done pretty quickly without major changes and, you know, without a huge expense. And so we really are pushing for all of those things to be included.
So Colin, what's next? If people want to support a safe roadway, how can they engage on this issue?
So the next major step here is that Caltrans has said that they will sort of report back to the Eureka City Council to identify what immediate sort of near-term changes can be made on Broadway to improve safety for pedestrians and bicyclists. That report is currently scheduled for the December 1st City Council meeting. So folks should, you know, keep their eye on that and show up to that meeting, talk to your Eureka City Council members and, you know, let them know just, you know, that we want to see all of the safety improvements that we can over the short term and, you know, to save lives. I think that's really the most important next step.
All right. Well, that's it for today's show. Thanks to Colin Fisk of the Coalition for Responsible Transportation Priorities, Jen Kalt of Humboldt Baykeeper, and Larry Glass with the North Coast Environmental Center for joining the show today to talk about the Coster Couplet and trying to make Highway 101 through Eureka safer. This has been another episode of the Eco News. Join us next week on this time and channel for more environmental news from the North Coast of California.